So the two topics we're talking about this week are...
Integrity.
And?
Influence.
And the book we're going through is...
Daniel.
We've gone Daniel 1 through 4. Today we're going to hit 5 and 6. One of the things we're talking about today is the importance of having a good reputation or having a good name. Consider going into a job interview and your name is Adolf Hitler. How do you think that job interview would go for you? Your name is like Napoleon. You might have a better chance unless you're really, really short, and then they're gonna, again, have this worry about you. Names can be rather important. Most of the time, right, most of us don't have a name that really sticks out in this kind of way. Obviously, a very bad way. However, your name can start to become kind of known for things. And if people know your name, if you give yourself a bad name, that sticks out. Randomly, there are some names I will not name my children. Simply because most of the guys I've known who are named that, I go, I don't want my kid to end up like that guy. And we're going to see a little bit of how Daniel had made a very good name for himself and his reputation was important. Proverbs 3, verses 3 and 4 says, "Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favor and a good name in the sight of God and man." So if you want to have favor with people, if you want to get a good name, if you want to have a good reputation, the first thing it says is, "Let love and faithfulness never leave you." Whatever you do, bind it on your neck, write it on your heart, have it around that love and faithfulness is what can bring about a good reputation. If you continue with those, if you're a faithful person with what you do, if you're a loving person with what you do. So in Daniel chapter 5, it opens with, we're about 22 years after the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar II. And now there's a new king. His name was King Nabidius, but he had a son named King Belshazzar. And while Nabidius was, I think it was like he's away at war or something like that. So he leaves Belshazzar in charge in Babylon. So Daniel is about 80 years old by this time. Belshazzar, my guess, is he's at least half of that, if not younger. So he's a young guy who decides, let's throw a party. He gets really excited. Apparently, like, dad's away on war stuff. I'm left in charge. Now we're going to have a party. I'm going to bring in all my friends, and this is going to be great. And he decides, you know what we're going to do? We're gonna get all these really nice goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, one time when he invaded Jerusalem, they went into the temple, and they got all these really cool like goblets that look awesome. So we're going to take those, and we're going to use those as part of our party apparel, because you need to have good party stuff to throw a good party. So, going back to the time when Daniel and all his people started being taken away, Nebuchadnezzar had also got these goblets from Jerusalem, from the temple, and are now using those. And it says that he's having this big party, and they're praising the gods of gold and silver and wood and stone, and they're just enjoying themselves. It's a rave party. Showing off how much money they have. Like, hey, this is how awesome we are. And money is his god. We're praising these gods. In the middle of the, like, knockout rave party that everyone would have wanted to be at, this hand shows up out of nowhere. Just a hand by itself. And starts writing on the wall. This sort of feels like we should be in the Addams Family or something. You know, like the hand, like, runs around everywhere. But if you're not in the Addams Family and just random hand disconnected from the rest of a body shows up and is like, hands moving around. Kind of creepy. Especially when it's writing in a language that you don't understand. So it says everybody kind of has this freak out moment, and Belshazzar, guy who's like, dad's away, I'm going to party, is now, it says he's so nervous, he's so afraid that his knees are knocking together. He's just this kind of completely went from, hey, anybody want more beer? To, what's happening? So bring in all the, like, the enchanters and the magicians and the sorcerers. Bring in everyone and have them tell me what this means. And if they do it, I'm going to give them, like, a purple cloak and this big pimp gold chain. And I'm going to make them, like, third most important person in the country. Because his dad's number one and Belshazzar's number two at the moment. So he's like, you get to be number three. If anyone can just tell me what this means. Because I'm so freaking out. So he brings in all the people and says, hey, look at this. What does this writing mean? And none of them have a clue. This just seems to happen. I kind of wonder what these enchanters were good for. If every time the king asked them to do something, I have no idea, king. This is just confusing to me. What good are you? Chop you in pieces and make your houses piles of rubble. But his materialism and his partying all before that was all very much forgotten once this handwriting is on the wall. And he's asked everyone else, nothing happens. And then the queen mother decides to come in. Apparently, mom didn't decide to be a part of this party ahead of time. But now she hears, your son's having this little, like, freak outfit. Maybe you should go try to, like, talk to him or see what's happening. And Queen Mom walks in and says, Balthazar, during the time of King Nebuchadnezzar, your predecessor, there was this man who was known as having, like, wisdom from the gods. His name was Daniel. Call him in and talk to this guy. Now, Daniel could have been very, like, offended of, why am I always the last one to be asked about these things? Sometimes in your life, you may have that, where you always feel like, man, I know what to do, I'm very good at this, and I'm always the last one who's asked to do it. They try to go through all these people who keep messing it up. Why don't they just come to me first? Don't worry, you're not the first person to have that feeling, that problem. It happens, happened to Daniel, but Daniel doesn't react. As that, he's just like, okay, I'll show up and see what this young nincompoop needs. So, he comes in and Belshazzar says, are you Daniel who, like, knows how to interpret dreams and can do all this stuff? Yep, that's me. Here's this writing on the wall, and if you can tell me what this means, then I will put this purple robe on you and this pink gold chain, and I'm going to make you the third highest in the kingdom. Okay? And Daniel turns looks at him and says, you can keep your junk. Or you can give your gifts away to somebody else. But I'll tell you what it says. I'm old. What do I need with a pink gold chain? I'm not going through a midlife crisis. I'm past that. It's not like I can leave it to my kids or anything. Russell is like, maybe you want the like purple coat. Because like old people get cold. And like, that'll keep you warm, right? I don't need that either. And being third in command of your kingdom, even you got a moron as your number two. You don't really want to be the third man right under that on the list. Just don't. And once you hear what the handwriting on the wall means, maybe it makes even more sense why he's like, I don't want to be connected with this. And Daniel says, this is the interpretation of what's on the wall. Now, Nebuchadnezzar, your predecessor, God made him into this awesome man who had an empire over everything. The men that he wanted to kill, he killed. The people that he wanted to spare, he spared. If he wanted to promote you, he promoted you. If he wanted to humble you, he humbled you. If he wanted to cut you into little pieces and make your houses into a pile of rubble, he did that too. He did all of it. But because of his arrogance, God brought him down, made him crazy, and he ran around naked as a jaybird with his hair going everywhere and his fingernails coming out, and dew covered him every morning. And you, Belshazzar, knew all about this. And yet you chose to be arrogant. So far, this is what Daniel said. Daniel has not at all said anything about the handwriting on the wall. Because to him, the beginning of all this was a history lesson. Before getting into, like, this is God's word for you. He says, here's the history. You knew about Nebuchadnezzar going nuts, though. I mean, as the next kind of king of mine, it wasn't like you forgot that as a child. Hey, who's that man running around naked? Oh, that's your king. Can I go climb that tree? Oh, that's the king's tree. Why, did he plant it there? No, he keeps marking it every morning. As a kid, he would have realized this. He's going, he was arrogant, and God humbled him. You should have learned something and not become so arrogant. And now, you've taken all of the goblets from this god who made your previous king nutso, and you're taking these, and you're praising your gods of money and materialism, of how awesome, how showy you can be, how much you can get everyone to look at you and think that, oh, you're the life of the party guy. Now this is what God says to you. After he's gone through history lesson, says what it says is, meeny, meeny, tekel, upharsin. If I said it wrong, it's not my language. But it means, you've been measured, your days have been numbered, you've been weighed in the scales and found wanting. And God's going to take your kingdom from you and give it to the Medes and the Persians. Not a happy message. It's awesome that Daniel really never changes. No matter who the king is, he's still going to tell you the truth. And normally, like, punk kids who are given power are not the people that you want to tell. You're doing it wrong because, yeah, they're not going to be happy with you. But maybe Daniel's like, dude, I'm 80. What are you going to do to me? Kill me? Come on, I made it through Nebuchadnezzar tons of times. You got nothing, punk. But Daniel is whoever he is, no matter who's in charge. And that's something to really take to heart. No matter who is your leader, you should be able to have that same integrity. The second thing, sometimes you have that, I'm looking for an answer from God. I'm really wanting him to say something. Can't you, like, give me some kind of special sign? What Daniel pretty much says to Belshazzar is, the first sign to you should not have been some special miracle from God. You should have learned from the history that was already in front of you. Too many times we're trying to look for God to say something else really special when we need to understand history that's around us. The Bible gives us tons of history. That's why we're going through Daniel this week. But your own personal life, don't be quick to forget the lessons that God has taught you. As they said, the people who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And this is Daniel saying something similar to that. Another really good recommendation, there are other people in your life who can learn from their mistakes before it comes to you. Your parents are one of those, your friends, a lot of people. Don't reject wisdom from history. It's another recommendation. Find some really good Christian biographies or autobiographies to read. That has been some of my favorite stuff, is to read stories of like missionaries or Christian business people or any of that stuff. Find those stories, because sometimes if you're trying to find God to tell you something, maybe he's saying, all the information is there, you just have to look at it. The history is there. Now, I do believe that God can speak directly through us, that through his Holy Spirit, he does that. Don't avoid prayer. Don't avoid asking God for those things. But don't skip the history part of it. Because sometimes, if you have to wait till you get the special sign, it's not God giving you a happy sign. It's God saying, I'm taking your kingdom away from you because you've been waiting, you've been found wanting, because you were falling after other things. Belshazzar did still say, okay, I'll give you your purple cloak and your pimp gold chain. That'll make you like third highest in my kingdom.
Great.
Because that same night, the Medes and the Persians came into the city and killed Belshazzar. The very same night. But it wasn't a hard takeover. The Medes and the Persians came in because like, this guy's a moron. And Belshazzar gets killed off. So now there's a new kingdom that's taken place. That's now starting into chapter 6. Cyrus is the king who was over all of Persia at the time. And it sounds like he kind of did this power-sharing thing with a guy named King Darius. So Darius is the one who's put in charge of Babylon that we hear about first. It's King Darius. King Darius decides, you know what? I need to set up people who are going to be in charge of things. So I'm going to have 120 satraps, which really what a satrap is... I don't know what a satrap is. I just know that they're in charge of governmentally things. So he says, I'm going to have 120 guys who do this, and then I'm going to have three people who are over these 120. King Darius decides he's going to have Daniel be one of the like three top guys over 120 governmental leaders. Now, consider today's world. If you have a company that's having a hostile takeover, another company comes in and says, we're buying you out, we're taking you over. What normally happens with people who are in management in the company that were there before? It's not like, oh, let's promote you. It's, you get the axe, you're gone. A lot of the little people, yeah, a lot of you are gone too, and it doesn't go well for you. I don't know how this worked out, where like, you have two kingdoms that are fighting against each other. The guy comes in, takes over a kingdom, and then says, you know what? I'm going to take one of their guys, and I'll just make him a leader now. Normally, I would expect the King Nebuchadnezzar treatment of chop them into little pieces and make all their houses into rubble of all of their leaders we don't like anymore. But Daniel had in some way so distinguished himself that people knew he's a person of faithfulness and he's going to be a good person in government no matter who's the governmental leader. Even though that night he'd been made into the third of command, which is maybe why Daniel was thinking, I don't need to be made third in command because normally they're not going to do nice things to like guy number one, two, and three. If you're going to lose your kingdom, who cares? But somehow, the way that Daniel was, his reputation had to go in front of him. Because they don't just show up and say, you look old. You want to run a kingdom? No. Somehow they knew about who he was. That reputation mattered even outside of his kingdom. And from what we see, that was the kind of guy Daniel was. Whether it was Nebuchadnezzar king, Belshazzar, it didn't matter. He was going to tell you the truth. He wasn't going to tell you what you wanted to hear, just because you wanted to hear it, but he was going to be good about what he did. So Darius decided, I'm going to make him among these three. As time went on through this, people realized Daniel was actually really, really good at what he did. So the king decides, you know what, I'm going to make even a new position. I'm going to make, like, this one person over the three people, over the 120 people, And I'm going to make Daniel this one guy who's over everybody. Because Daniel's just that good. Now consider this from the sides of Medes and Persians. Say you're like one of the two other guys of the three. You've been a Mede and Persian. You fought alongside them. You've been in their government for a while. Then you're part of this takeover of a new kingdom. And the king says to you, you know what? Thanks for being around, guys. But there's this new guy. And I want him to be over control of all you guys. How would you feel about that? Lots of them are like, no, we don't like this. Seems like he's, does everything perfect. He's just this great old guy being in charge of all this. This doesn't seem right. So we're going to find something to get this man in trouble. Here's an important point. Just because you have a good name or a good reputation doesn't mean people are going to like you. Doesn't mean people have good feelings toward you. Because sometimes, flat out, people don't like other people with good reputations. Because it makes them feel awkward, or it makes them feel bad, or they just can't be that good. I don't know why, it's the same thing inside of us. But realize that that will happen. People may not like you, even if you have a good reputation. But that means all the more you have to be strong with your integrity. Because if people are trying to bring you down, they're going to work all the harder, and you need to know that there's nothing that they can have on you. Which is what happens. These guys are all trying to find something wrong with Daniel. And it says, they came together and said, you know what, we've looked, and there's nothing in his work that's wrong with Daniel. He is neither corrupt nor negligent. If we're ever to find any basis against him, it will be something that has to do with the law of his God. That would be awesome to have said of you. We will never find any basis for charges against this man. I really don't know that I'm that good at my work to say, like, no one could ever find something wrong with what I do. Daniel had this, he was neither corrupt nor negligent. What those two are, corrupt, he never did anything purposely wrong. He couldn't be bribed. He couldn't just be working for himself. But he was also not lazy and like, oh, I'm just going to stay out of everything. He wasn't negligent. And no matter what way it was, Daniel was sure to get it done, and he was sure to get it done right. An interesting verse, just because I love the words of it. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 1 says, as dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. How many of you women, if you bought Chanel number 5, but found that there were dead flies inside of your perfume bottle, would still want to wear that perfume? Guys, if you had X men's spray and you're shaking it around and you hear there are all these dead flies inside of it, and you're thinking, am I going to have a woman tackle me in the street if I wear this cologne? Sometimes small things can outweigh something that's very valuable and precious. And the same is with a little folly in your life can outweigh a lot of honor and wisdom. And that to me, like, that gets me. When I go, man, I could do the right thing like 50 times in a row, and one time just choose to be an idiot person, and that can outweigh all of the good stuff that I've done in people's eyes. It doesn't seem fair. Maybe it's not fair. But trust me, if you look in the world and you see that, you see all these people, you see pastors who have done so many great things for people, they've been awesome, but then there's this one thing that was an indiscretion, or they did one thing that was wrong, or they got into one fight with somebody. That changes people's reputation of you, and that colors everything else that they thought about you beforehand. All the good stuff you were, they're like, was he doing it for a different reason? If you're a business person, and you've been doing great in your business, but there's one deal that you do wrong, that you are corrupt in it or negligent in it, and that gets found out, you're fired. There's a journalist who was a very good photographer, and he took a picture one time, but then he cheated the picture of, like, the sun wasn't in the perfect spot for him, so he digitally, like, changed the angle from which he was taking the picture just so that the sun could be in a different spot and there'd be a camel there. To where, is that really changing anything of substance? I mean, it wasn't like he threw a terrorist in the picture or anything, it's just where the sun's going down. That was huge. Everyone in the journalistic world was going off on how bad this was because he cheated on a picture. Not even like I wrote a lie into a story about the President of the United States, but just one little thing, despite the fact that he's a really great photojournalist. No matter what area you're in, sometimes if you choose one little bit of folly, that can cause a big problem in your life. Integrity has to be key. And Daniel was that kind of guy that they couldn't find anything. So they said, okay, let's come up with some kind of plan that has to do with the law of his God. If there's one thing that we know about kings, is that they're kind of arrogant and they like to be worshipped. So this is what we're going to do. They all go to the king and say, oh, king, live forever. You're such a great guy, Darius. We love you. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I know. King, this is our idea. For 1 month, you should make this decree that no one can pray to any other god except you. I never thought about that. That's a great idea. Everyone praying to me to worship me. I like it. Let's write this decree. And if they do worship somebody else, then they get thrown into a den of lions. It's a little more sporting chance than the cutting up into pieces thing, I guess. Like, let's see how long they can run around. So this decree is made. Among the Medes and Persians, a king could not overturn his decree later. So it's like in stone. And it says that Daniel found out about it. And then he went into his house. He walked upstairs to the place that he normally prayed, where the windows opened towards the temple in Jerusalem. And three times a day, he would get down and pray. It doesn't say Daniel thought about it, like, what could I do differently? It doesn't say Daniel said, you know what? How about I just shut the windows? I mean, that'd be easy. God can still hear me through a door, through a wall, through windows. Shut the windows. That's all you have to do. Or, you know what? I'm fasting prayer for a month. That sounds very spiritual. Like, any of these ideas. Daniel just goes home, goes upstairs, and continues to do exactly what he would have done otherwise. Sometimes when you come to those, like, oh, what do I do in this situation? Because this could go really wrong. Stop, and if you take out what the possible consequences could be and choose what would I do, whether or not there are consequences, and follow through that way and leave the consequences to God. Similar to what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said of, we don't need to defend ourselves before you. God can save us. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But that's not changing the way that we're acting. So Daniel is doing this prayer thing, and I don't know if like all of the guys like came around downstairs and like saw him up in his window, or if they all like walked into his house and like, ha! You're praying! Put your hands up, they're already there. Never mind. So he's drawn before King Darius, and they say, King Darius, you remember you made this decree that anyone who prayed to anyone else apart from you should be thrown to the lion's den. Oh yeah, I remember that. My ears have been itching and burning more recently, because people keep saying my name all around the city. I feel like I'm getting more prayer to me. This is great. Yeah. Okay, anyway. So, there's this guy who didn't pray to you, and it's Daniel, your favorite guy! And Darius goes, oh, that was a bad idea. Because now he realizes, this is a man that I trust, that I want to give control of things, and because of my own stupidity, now I have to throw him into a den of lions. And it says that he tried the rest of the day. He's trying to figure out ways around it. And they keep saying, King, you know our law. You can't change what you already said. You said it once. It's done. Sorry. Two things about these people. Number one, they didn't understand history very well. They didn't look at every other time that people tried to kill off Daniel and his friends because of their god. It didn't work out very well. They probably could have figured this out, but they chose not to. The second thing. Yes, they were going to bring Daniel down. Daniel would have been thrown into the lions then. Great hurrah. But if you're messing with your boss, and if you trick him into doing something, and he realizes you tricked him into doing something because you didn't like this other guy, you're going to get caught because of that, because of how obvious they were. And that's not going to make the job nicer. He's not going to be happier with you and say, you know what, let's take you instead. Because you like to trick me. How about you be in charge of everybody? Stupid idea. Don't do it. Don't try tricking your boss just to get in good by putting someone else down. It's not nice. Your mother should have told you not to do that as children. So the king tries everything, and eventually at nightfall, I have to be true to what I said. So they take Daniel, this 80-year-old guy, to the ledge. And Daniel looks at him and says, Daniel, may your God, whom you continually serve, rescue you. Here's an interesting thing to me about it. These guys knew that Daniel continually served his God, and they knew that he was someone who prayed often. But it never says that Daniel prayed in the middle of a business meeting. It never says that Daniel walked out in the middle of the street and was praying. He prayed three times a day, at his home on the second floor. It's not like he's standing in the front window for everyone like, hey, everybody, I'm praying to the temple. There's a sign on the outside of his door that says, like, temple that way, 5,000 miles. Apparently, all he did was go home and pray at home, but they knew he was someone who prayed, and they knew that he was someone who continually served his God. Live the kind of life that you don't have to be in front of everyone being like, I'm praying now, to people who aren't Christians at your workplace. But live in such a way, and maybe look for the kinds of ways where you can be known as someone who prays regularly. Someone who continually serves their God, even if it's not, oh, I'm always flaunting this in front of you, I pray. Because somehow they found out that that's the kind of guy Daniel was. So Daniel gets lowered into this lion's den, and they put this whole thing over the top of it. Darius just can't sleep that night. He's like, dang, what am I going to do now? I was going to give him charge of everything, and now I have to do all the work still. And he feels bad about what he did. Apparently, kings normally have this, like, oh, well, let's just kill off everybody. But every now and again, they get this twinge of guilt. Like, maybe that guy I shouldn't have killed. The other ones, whatever. But, like, that guy. I like that guy. He made my coffee. Now no one makes good coffee anymore. So Daniel's down in there, and in the morning, early in the morning, says Darius runs out there, and he has the thing taken away. He's like, Daniel, are you still alive? Tell me you're alive. Tell me your God saved you. And Daniel's still there and says, yeah, during the night, God sent an angel. He shut the mouths of the lions. Everything's good, you know. And so he gets brought up out of it. And then Darius decides, you know what? I normally might do the whole chop them into pieces and make their houses into a pile of rubble. But since we have a lion's den right here, all those guys who accused you to me, we'll get them and their families and we'll just throw them into the lion's den. So all the guys who first were trying to destroy Daniel end up getting destroyed, and their families. And it says, like, before they were even able to touch the ground, lions just went ape wild on them. And it's like, yeah, they were licking off the plate by the time it was all said and done. And Darius says, hey, your God is a good God. And so Daniel, through his lifetime, has had at least three kings realize who God is, not trying to seek his own glory in it. I mean, he's the one who said, I don't need your rewards. I don't need your stuff. But because of the way that he lived, because of his integrity and his influence, he made a difference. Having a good name and having a good reputation also plays into who you're around. Just like Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael were friends with Daniel, and that made a big difference in their life. You can also go the wrong way. All those little guys that thought that we don't like Daniel, and someone said, hey, let's come up with a way to kill him. And they all said, sure, sounds like a great idea. The people that you get yourself around can make your life turn out very not good, or they can help build you up and it be very good. Three verses I want to stick out to you. 1 Corinthians 5, verses 9 through 11. He says, I've written you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people. Not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters. In this case, you would have to leave this world. But now I'm writing you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother, but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or a slanderer, a drunkard or a swindler. With such a man, do not even eat. In Romans 16:17, he says, beware of people who walk in as brothers and they cause division among you. Pay attention to those that are trying to start up fights and don't have anything to do with them. In both of those verses, the 1 Corinthians and the Romans one, he's saying, there are people in the world who aren't going to act righteously. And why would I expect them to act righteously if they don't follow God's laws? But be very careful among those who are like, oh yeah, God's great. But then the way that they live is something that's going to bring you down and going to bring them down with it. If they choose not to have an integrity, be careful of being around them. Be very careful of that. In 1 Corinthians 15:33, he says, don't be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. And I would go a step farther. Bad company can corrupt a good reputation. Because the people that you're around, the people that you associate yourself with, is what other people will associate you with. If you're always hanging around people who are making stupid decisions, and they see you with them all the time, then they're going to think, he's one of them. Or she's one of them. If they're known for arrogance, you'll be known for arrogance. If they're known for violence, you'll be known for violence. Or the guy that goes along with it, if nothing else. Watch your reputation, your character, because of those things.
last verse I want to say is Romans 14, verses 17 and 18. On the flip side of it, it says, the kingdom of God, it's not a matter of eating and drinking, but it's of righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit. Because anyone who serves Christ in this way is pleasing to God and approved by men. Righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Spirit is what gets you a good name, a good reputation before God and with people. That doesn't mean people are going to like you for it. He's not just saying, okay, just make sure that life is completely easy for yourself. It's righteousness. You do have to be concerned about how you act. Also joy. Don't be known as like downer person. Have joy. Righteousness, peace, and joy that is pleasing to God and approved by men.